Coming up today, European roaming charges are set to end in 2014. Good news for you international data users. Google has announced new measures to tackle child abuse images on the internet. And can your cat start taking selfies? All that and more coming up. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to pornography laws and animal photography. I'm your host, Nate Langson, and I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Olivia underscore Solon.
And I'm Leah Clark.
And this week, I'm exhausted. I've just carried an eight-man tent from North London by hand.
That wasn't very sensible.
Like some sort of...
And you're going to have only two people in said tent, right?
Yeah, but we've got a lot of stuff.
That's some serious luxury. What are you bringing?
I wanted a living area. Okay. Like, it's a long festival that I'm going to.
You know, you can get
France.
Ones with living areas.
Yeah, that's what this is.
Oh, okay. So it's not like...
Yeah. So that you can sleep... There's like one bedroom that can sleep four people, another that can sleep two. To me, that's just me spread out and another person.
But do they
And then a
not...
big living room you can use as sleeping area if you
can
want.
Can you not access like Cradle of Filth's trailer or something?
Not to sleep in, no.
No.
To drink beers in, yes.
No, but the lounging area...
Yeah, I don't think I can sleep there.
No.
No. Okay. Anyway, we're going to get on with the show today. We've got a few bits of housekeeping I wanted to catch up on. Firstly, we've done a huge amount of coverage of E3. You may have heard our special episode of the podcast last week from Los Angeles. If you missed it and want to catch up on all the important news from E3, do go and check your feed. You'll find a very special episode in addition to last week's show. We're also going to be continuing coverage, obviously, throughout the rest of the year. So go to wired.co.uk/news and keep up to date with all the latest gaming stuff. Liv, I wanted to just quickly update people. You're involved in something we're doing called Wired Next Generation.
Yes.
We're making kids important in the wired world.
We are. Well, we've had a couple of events. For the last 2 years, we've run an event called Wired, 2012 and 2011. And this year, for Wired 2013, we've got the 2 days of the regular adult conference, but we're adding a third day that's targeted at 12 to 16-year-olds. And the idea is to inspire them into STEAM subjects, so science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. And so we're getting loads of amazing speakers and holding loads of workshops, and it's on Saturday the 19th of October.
We've got details, wiredevent.co.uk. Do check it out, alongside Wired Money coming up on the 1st of July, wiredmoney.co.uk. Lots of events. Yeah. Reason I'm out of breath, honestly. But let's get on with the news. Going to start by something that is extremely close to my heart today, because about an hour ago I actually had an email from our publisher saying, you've been using quite a lot of data abroad. Just had a recent bill. I'm yet to know how much it is. I'm a little bit nervous. But this could be set to end, because European roaming charges, the charges you get for using data outside of the UK, going to end next year, Liv.
This is amazing news.
So if you've had what they call bill shock, which is where you come back from, say, France.
Like every time you
go to France. Yeah, and you've said, I've just checked a few emails, sent a few tweets, and emailed a couple of photos back home, put something on Facebook, and it cost you about £40.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen anymore, because across Europe from next year, you are going to pay for data what your contract says you pay for data locally. So if you're paying, you know, £10 a month for, say, an unlimited data plan in the UK... then you'll be able to use that data in Germany and in France and in Spain and across the continent for the same price.
Phenomenal news. And they've actually also capped it from this July. They've put a cap in place to make it, that, you know, so there's an upper limit on how much you can pay, which they didn't actually have before.
That's right. And this is really, really significant, I think, because there are about, I think, somewhere around 100 different operators in the European area. And they use these things called termination rates, not to bill customers directly, but to bill other networks. Mm. And exclusively, basically, the networks pass those bills on to the user. And it's not unexpected to pay about £3 per megabyte outside of the UK on, you know, a UK-based contract overseas. That's just, I mean, £3 a meg. Mm. To put that into perspective, if you upload a photo to Facebook, that might be a megabyte.
Yeah.
So that's going to have to be a bloody good photo.
No matter how careful I think I'm being, I always get a shock when I come home.
Well, I think our publisher just had a massive shock when I got back from E3.
But Nate, you're in LA, so that's not really going to be affected.
It's never going to help.
Do you know how much it costs to use a megabyte of data in the US on my contract? £6.
No.
Whoa.
£6. So it's not going to have to be a bloody good photo. It's going to be a bloody good photo.
Yeah.
What the heck did you do then? But you could only tweet so you know a couple times.
So this is the problem. This is the problem. I mean, it's fortunately we're a big company and we can absorb overseas roaming costs. But the average guy in the street couldn't. And let's just say, I couldn't. I mean, I don't know how big this bill is, but I put it this way: I've never been contacted before to say you've just had a massive phone bill for data. So I'm assuming it's pretty big. Yeah. And and I'm assuming that if I had to pay that myself, we could be talking quite a lot of money. But the thing is, all I was doing while I was in LA was emailing, the occasional updates to Twitter to keep people in touch with what we're doing. But, I wasn't uploading photos. I wasn't downloading apps, anything like that.
But if you've got your email notifications from work...
Yes, but the thing is, but that's not that much. It doesn't download attachments automatically. Okay. Do you know what I think it is? I think it's a symptom of smartphones. And I wouldn't be surprised if the reason that my particular bill, and for many other people this could be true as well, was so high was because my new Galaxy S4, which is my new work phone, was the first time I'd used it properly. And I wonder if it was updating apps automatically in the background over 3G. Yeah. And each meg costs, I'm sure we're on a corporate rate, I don't know, but it's probably still going to be a pound or two a meg. Well, it's good news. We'll be keeping you posted, obviously, on when this comes into force. But we have a story on wired.co.uk right now. If you go to European roaming charges in our handy little search box, you will find our story. Liat.
Nate.
I'm not going to try and do a segue into this next story, but let's just go with the headline. Google's announced measures to tackle child abuse images on the internet. Let's get into this. Yes. What has the company announced?
Well, Google wants to use a technology called hashing to better tackle child abuse images online. And it's something they've actually been doing since 2008. But going forward, they want to actually create a database using this technology to flag up images that they can then share throughout the industry and better tackle the problem.
Do you want to explain what a hashing is?
I will do that for you. So basically what the system does is once you've identified an image online, it will assign it uses image recognition to identify and tag it and assign it a unique fingerprint. And then once that's been ascribed to it, the original image can then be used to identify and deal with replicas all over the internet.
It's not completely dissimilar to how a barcode represents a unique product.
Absolutely, yeah. So this will be going on behind the scenes. And the idea is as soon as these images emerge and they're identified and tagged, all the other images will be pulled off automatically. So there's less chance of people seeing them. It's basically great news. It's something they've been doing for a while, but it looks like it may have been instigated by that they've come out with this announcement. They want to do the database by everything that's been going on and MPs coming out saying they need to do more. UK government advisor and child internet John Carr said that in all his time working in the sector, no company has ever devoted anything like this level of resources to working with civil society organisations to attack online child abuse images. So it really looks like all the haranguing from MPs has been paying off and they're really taking it seriously. They've already donated some money to the charity that actually works alongside companies like Google to tackle
it. That is actually a pittance. Some of the companies
it's a few million.
Yeah, sometimes it's not even that. It's measured in a few thousand per month.
And they're even doing it. Wait, sorry, you're talking about the images on the.
I'm talking about the amount of money massive internet companies pay to the IWF.
Yeah, I think I read today that for this database, they're investing something like $5 million, which is like nothing to them. They could be doing a lot more, but at least they're doing something and they've developed this technology.
Enormous corporate responsibility being utilized here.
It's not just Google actually doing this type of things. I think they've been getting the headlines because they've been getting a lot of flack from people and they've been getting a lot of attention. But actually, Microsoft created something called PhotoDNA, which works on a similar premise with Dartmouth College, and that finds and removes images from their servers. And I think Facebook uses this service as well. So they have been working on it for some time.
The technology that some of these companies use in investigations about child abuse is, obviously it's an incredibly distressing topic, but the actual technology behind it can be fascinating in terms of using things like background object recognition.
Yeah.
So if there is a, you know, a photograph or a video, they can monitor where certain, what certain backdrops are and see if they appear in other cases, and if a child is maybe located in one, perhaps it could be linked. Mm. And
I remember there was a great example. I mean, it wasn't particularly high-techy, but it was a few years ago when a man had been in a picture abusing a child, and they'd swirled out his face. I don't know if he did it or someone else did it to anonymize him, but they managed to de-anonymize it by going back through the image data
Remember that, and he did do it himself.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
and they found him as a result. They had his photo and said, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah, because they were able to use the same algorithms that do the swirly generation thing. That's the official name, by the way. And effectively just reverse the process.
Yeah,
it's fascinating.
You're already listening to the Wired.co.uk podcast, but you might have a friend who is less fortunate. Why not send them a postcard with wired.co.uk/podcast written on the back, so they can join in.
On to a cheerier topic. The some former Aardman and BBC execs have launched, quote, the next generation content incubator. Now, normally when I hear the word incubator, I think of either chickens or startups.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between those.
Plastic chickens.
No, there's a lot of buzzwords in that next generation content incubator. But no, this is the former head of broadcast at Aardman Animations, who are obviously of Wallace and Gromit fame. And he's called Miles Bullock. Oh, I don't know if I've said that right.
I think I've met him.
And a former BBC creative executive called Jesse Cleverly, and they've teamed up to launch this incubator called Wild Seed Studios. And the things that they are incubating are not chickens and they're not startups per se, but they are ideas, content ideas. And that could be across any platform. They're trying to be, as they say, platform neutral. So it could be someone with an idea for an app, a web series, a game, a book, a movie, or even a kind of regular TV show.
So this is more than just Shaun the Sheep going transmedia, right?
This is, well, it could be a Shaun the Sheep going transmedia. And in fact, they met over Shaun the Sheep. Miles was selling the programme and Jesse was buying it at the BBC. And that's where they met and they kind of started plotting the idea. Well, not then, but a few years later started plotting the idea for their business. And they decided to set it up because they realised that content creators have never had it so easy in terms of lowering the barriers of entry to production. You know, you can knock out a little animation in your bedroom now. But as Jesse told me on the phone, you know, what you got when there were higher barriers to entry were things like training, mentorship, finance. And now that there's so many people out there, it's hard, sometimes hard to get that. And so Wildseed wants to provide funding, and they'll offer up to 50 investments of £10,000 over 3 years, but also mentorship and putting, you know, connections in place if people want to develop ideas beyond their bedroom.
What happens if one of these projects is like commercially successful? Is it kind of like, because universities have this problem with revenue sharing, sometimes they claim ownership over a patent?
Yeah, well, these guys are really keen to make sure that the content creators themselves retain creative control. In traditional formats, when you're selling, say, a TV show, you go to the TV, you know, you develop the idea and you go to the TV company and they will give you maybe quite a big advance, but then you'll get a very, very small share of anything else that happens or from the production company. But in this case, what they want to do is have a minority share, revenue share, but as soon as either party isn't happy with each other, the creative control automatically goes back to the original creator, which is really nice. But what I like about them, although they're not focusing on a particular platform, is that they are focusing on some particular categories. What they say is they want any piece of content to have great characters at the heart of the project. So it's very much playing to, you know, the Aardman sort of strengths.
So it could be chickens.
It could be chickens. They're looking for sci-fi, horror, fantasy. That's one category.
That would be terrifying. With
animated
chickens.
Sitcoms.
Ah.
Chickens. Character comedy and also comedy for children.
And so I think we could come up with a concept and pitch system, because I've had this idea about a sitcom, which I don't know whether I should talk about it, because honestly, I think it's genius. I think it might be one of the best things I've ever come up with.
Well, you can't say that without sharing it.
Yeah, but he's going to give it away.
Give us a hint.
Okay, well, you know they say play to your strengths and write about what you know.
Yeah.
Well, I know quite a lot about the technology journalism scene in the UK and the PR scene in the UK.
Okay.
And there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes on when a technology person gets very, let's say, romantically involved with a PR. And not from personal experience.
Flacks and hacks.
Hacks. Very common.
That's all I'm saying. But it is a brilliant idea. But anyway, I think we could come up with this. Or we could do something like podcasting. You know, it's like podcasting It's a group of podcasting chickens.
Okay.
Or chickens who learn how to podcast.
I like the other idea better.
And they're trying to get their show successful on the farm.
They want to get their message out there.
It could be called winging it.
We'd like more space than we needed.
Well, we can pitch it, and then we might or might not get up to £10,000 to develop the idea to the point where we can put it in front of an audience, and then they can decide whether or not to kind of continue to support it financially.
For real. I'll use that money to pay off our phone bill. One last story in the first half of the show. Oculus Rift has raised a lot of money. Now, Oculus Rift is the product. Oculus VR is the company that makes it. This is this amazing virtual reality headset that I'm totally not envious that Liat got to use. And even though I was at E3 where they had the Oculus set, I still get to use it.
Oh my goodness. Why didn't you?
Playing Octodad.
Oh.
It was really good. But the company has just received around £10 million in funding, or about $16 million officially, in VC funding for its virtual reality projects. Now, this comes from Spark Capital and Matrix Partners, and this goes on top of the company's extremely successful Kickstarter funding, which is over $2 million and has resulted in the product already being made and sent out to developers.
I feel like they can't go wrong. People are throwing money at them.
So here's what we're talking about. We're going into a next-gen console era. We've got this basically the first virtual reality headset that not only lives up to the hype that has been around virtual reality for about 2 decades, but people are actually prepared to buy. You've got developers like Valve, who make things like Half-Life and Team Fortress, on board to make these games. And now they've got millions in funding to commercialize the product. This is tremendous news if you're a gamer. And Liat, for a non-gamer as yourself,
yeah,
to
get incredible.
Excited over something like this could be such an incredible
just
boom for the industry.
The scene that they put me in, they had knocked up in a week, and I was petrified. I was sweating and shaking and trying my hardest to look really cool.
But Team Fortress 2, which is from Valve, that's going to support the Oculus Rift, and it's one of the most popular online multiplayer shooters ever.
I feel like you'd need counselling before and after. Yeah. I'd be too scared to do anything. Like, I used to play RPGs a lot, but I would never like ones where I could die. I liked really non-violent ones, and because it freaked me out. So I would not fare well dying with an Oculus Rift.
I think it's more about the spatial awareness and how it'll kind of overcome your senses in that respect, in addition to, you know, your other senses.
You're going to break a lot of stuff in your house.
You know, you said when you were walking across the little kind of, it looked like it was walking across a precipice, that you felt really nauseous and you were terrified.
Yeah.
I mean, the thought of having that level of immersion, I can see what you mean. Amazing in some ways, but also potentially terrifying. I get scared enough as it is.
And I think using it in conjunction with, what's it called? The one that you kind of shuffle your feet
the
on.
The Omni.
There's one that you run on.
Yeah.
There's a couple different ones. Will enhance it even more, but then at least you're kind of trapped. You're enclosed in a space with those. They kind of have a barrier around them, because I can imagine throwing myself down on the floor to hide from people.
We should get Aardman on this. Team Aardman's money up with this, with my great story idea and podcasting chickens. What a future we live in. What a world. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, a double bill of one of our favourite segments, Sex Watch.
Audible.co.uk is offering every listener of the Wired.co.uk podcast a free audiobook of your choice from a catalogue of over 80,000 titles. To claim yours now, go to audible.co.uk/wired and sign up for your free trial and your free book.
Welcome back. First topic of this segment, half of the show, Sex Watch. And this is a Sex Watch special because for some reason, and I don't know why, we've been covering a lot about the pornography world recently.
It's been in the news.
From bans to payment issues to goodness knows what else. Now, we've got two stories that arose this week that Liat is going to cover the first of. And it's about a UK regulator has sought to block card payments to Pornhub, which is one of the biggest, if not, I think, possibly the biggest free online pornography destination globally. Is this a massive deal?
It is. It's a pretty big deal. First of all, did you know that we've got a TV on-demand regulator? We do. They're called ATVOD. And they are saying that they want to try and stop money going to US websites like Pornhub. So basically, obviously, we can control, we have easier control in the UK, but this is trying to convince the necessary parties involved to cut these payments off so they don't leave the country. The reason being, websites like this offer free porn, which is wonderful. Yes, no. They also do not bother with age verification, things like credit card verification or passports and driving license checks, which is necessary for hardcore porn, basically, which is what they're giving away for free as a taster for people to kind of try and log on to the rest of their content and then pay.
Yeah, I mean, I think traditionally the idea is that if you have a credit card, you're over 18.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the thing. And mobile operators in the sort of WAP era would let you access porn on the phone if you authorized a credit card.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it's a good method of verification.
Yeah.
But you're
absolutely
right. You can go to this website. And I think one of us did for research purposes this week.
Yes.
To just make absolutely sure that you could browse yeah. pornography.
I must say, I've tried it too and I was shocked. I mean, you assume you have to pay for that kind of stuff. I was like, why does anybody pay for porn if this is free?
Does this mean that people are going to stop being able to access Pornhub?
No, not at all. Well, I mean, unless Pornhub, you know, just suddenly loses all their money. I mean, it's going to take a while to convince people to do this anyway. But basically, it's any money. It's basically to deter them, and it's a pretty good deterrent if people stop paying you money. And it's specifically that they're trying to target material that might impair the moral development of under 18s. It's actually in violation of UK law, and since 2000. There was a law passed that said that US sites downloaded in the UK would be subject to UK law. So it's within our rights to do this. So they're currently actually trying to convince necessary parties to blacklist them. This is the only way they can do it, if you have a kind of universal blacklist and get the UK Cards Association to sign up, which includes major players like American Express and Barclays. So I think go at VOD. They should be doing this.
It's a challenge. There's definitely good reason to do this. It's a challenge because the problem with a lot of these porn sites, a friend told me, is that people are nervous about having sites like that appear on the credit card bill.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want, you know, sexy PR women. .com
your niche interest.
I don't know. You don't want that appearing on the credit card, right? So people, I think, tend to use things like PayPal.
Well,
yeah, instead.
I think more the issue is I agree that I think age verification could be a good thing, and it might potentially, you know, protect some children from seeing stuff that they didn't want to see and suddenly see, and I don't know how often that happens. But I feel like they've gone for a really hardcore approach to, you know, requiring things like credit card verification or passport, driving licenses, checks. It feels a bit much,
driving
bit heavy-handed.
License checks. Definitely, yeah, and passport. But I think they do this anyway for the sites, for the hardcore stuff, usually behind a paywall.
They don't.
No,
behind a paywall.
None of it.
No. So, no. Now, this is the weird thing. I'm pretty sure they used to. I'm pretty sure if you used to go to a porn site, again, friend told me this, it would put up like a age verification window, just like video games do now.
But that's just like
tick this box. Yeah, but that's better than that.
It is, but it at least deters you from accidentally clicking on a link.
Yeah.
In Google or anything, because there's nothing wrong with these sites legally. They operate within the law. There's nothing illegal on these sites. It's just the law is about preventing people from accidentally seeing.
Well, the law that it's about is that you need age verification.
Yeah,
but
that doesn't have to be
hardcore material.
Credit card verification.
No, but they've obviously got nothing on there.
But how else do you do it? And would it not cut down the number of people that want to sign up to a service if they have to jump through hoops? Surely the appeal is that you could either do it anonymously or through accounts that aren't verified, like PayPal or any of these sort of e-payments, Bitcoin even. You know, if they start saying, well, you have to use Visa or MasterCard, you have to do verified by MasterCard, if you've got an account you share with a partner, you know.
But I also think this means you only target the legitimate sites that have payment systems, as opposed to the sites, the many, many free sites that aren't subject to, you know, don't require payment, just put up very extreme material and don't have age verification. I think it's almost unfair on Pornhub, which is probably one of the better policed websites that is out there.
I agree. Well, we'll follow this development. But the second interesting story on the topic of pornography this week is that UK ISPs are going to include porn filters as standard in the UK by next year. So we're going to get standardized roaming rates but filtered pornography live?
It's a price you pay.
Well, yes. So this is kind of the weird thing is, but there is someone called David Cameron, Special Advisor on Preventing the Sexualization and Commercialization of Childhood. That's Mary
that was
Miller,
the worst
isn't it?
Thing I'd ever read.
And she has announced at an event last week that filters for pornographic content will come as a default setting for all homes in the UK by the end of 2013. Now, I think last year, or perhaps at the beginning of this year, we've talked about how there were threats to make people have to kind of opt in to receive pornography and call up their ISPs. But I don't think this is what they're talking about. What they're talking about is that ISPs will be expected to provide some filtering technology to new and existing customers with an emphasis on opting out rather than opting in. That's not a case of I have to ring up my ISP and demand that they allow me to access pornography. It's more that when I set up my account, I will be presented with the filters available and I will have to untick a box if I want to view the adult content. And you know what? I actually think this isn't a bad idea.
I agree. It reminds me of what happens on sort of premium X-rated channels on cable.
Yeah.
Like that.
You know, just if you're a parent, you sometimes don't even know about how to find the filters. So to have it up front, to give you the option at that point when you set it up to decide, I think is not a bad idea.
There was a similar arrangement that I think might still be in practice for some of the mobile networks where by default, access to a list of sites deemed legal but pornographic or explicit, whatever, you have to call up and say, I want this ban or this bar lifted from my account. They verify that you're the account holder or authorized to ask for this and remove it. And I don't like that because I don't think someone should have to feel embarrassed to ask for access to something that's perfectly legal.
Yeah.
And, you know, regardless of your opinion on it, like, is a big part of culture like anything else in a way. I don't mind this if it's just a checkbox like incognito mode or do you want to store cookies or whatever.
I agree. I've had some really bizarre stuff blocked when I've had filters on that you've had to then call up and say, you know, websites that manage to get thrown into the mix that are completely inoffensive.
Yeah, like why.co.uk. There was a kid emailed me the other day from school saying, hi, I'm a student. And I went into your website and it's been blocked because of explicit content or sexual material.
Right.
And I think it's because
we should stop writing about porn.
But one of the interesting things that they've talked about, which I don't know whether or not they're going to definitely be implemented, but I think should be, are things like time limited deactivation. So you could set a time of like maybe 9 p.m. You can access more adult material until 7 a.m. So after kids have gone to sleep, the free for all. And other suggestions that perhaps on a device by device basis, you could describe certain filters to a device within the home. And I think that's a much more sensible approach to the matter.
I agree. I think that's good. And this is going to come into effect next year.
Next year, they say, ISPs have supposedly agreed to this, but it won't affect a lot of social sharing sites where you can access explicit material such as Reddit and Imgur. I don't know how you ever say that word.
I always say Imgur.
Imgur?
Yeah.
But so you are.
Imgur.
Okay. Imgur. I don't know.
I've always read it Imgur.
Should probably point out that Condé Nast owns Reddit.
No.
If you've been affected by any of the issues raised on this week's podcast, why not tell us about them? The team is waiting for your comment at facebook.com/wiredUK.
Last story before we end. Massive story for us this week, even though it's daft. It's a bit of a silly one to finish on, but it's just so good. This is our section called, a new section, actually. You're Simply the Beast. Guess where that came from. This is a new section where we talk about animal related things going on in the wild world, and this is a great one. Snapcat. It's an app that came out of a hack day in Germany that simulates a laser pointer on the screen of an iPhone on a screen of an Android phone or a tablet, gets a cat to paw at the screen, and when the paw hits the screen, it activates the camera. It's selfies for cats.
Yeah, it's amazing.
How so? This when
internet
we,
squared
when we cats plus selfies equals win. When we published this story, Twitter went mad. We had so many people. Like normally, what we get is a lot of retweets, a lot of people just replying to us with comments about the story, things like that. I think this might be the most number of times I have seen people tweeting our link, like retweeting us and adding a comment saying, oh, one for you at such and such.
Yeah.
Because clearly there's a demand for this.
Yeah, everyone knows
clearly
somebody wants
a lot of people have said, would it be great if we could get cats to take their own photo?
And how awesome would it be if it automatically uploaded to a central website so you'd have this kind of secret lives of cats?
Well, there's this site that's just launched in the UK called Yummy Pets. That's a social network for cats. My cat's on it, obviously. Look him up. Socks. Train of thought's gone.
Maybe Socks could link his Snapcat account to his Facebook account and show all the cat ladies what they're missing out on.
Very true. Now, you know what? This isn't the first app like this. There was an app that came out a couple of years ago called Paint for Cats. And it's a great iPad game. Obviously, I've got it. that simulates a laser pointer on a screen. You put the iPad on the floor. Cats go mad for it. And so much so that for quite a long time, if I just walked into the room with my iPad, the cat knew what it was. Like the attention and following it around, looking up, following me as I went. They knew.
They're waiting.
They recognised the iPad and they knew that iPad
meant funsies.
Equaled epic fun time.
There's loads of games now where you can remotely play with them too.
Well, this
we can just be watching them all day.
This is my idea. My business idea of the future is to open the world's biggest and most technologically sophisticated cat sanctuary, where you can either leave your cat in the home and there's like cameras everywhere, kind of like Big Brother style, remote, like internet controlled levers and treats and things, and two-way sound system, so you can leave your pet in there, go on holiday, check in on an
you
iPhone app.
You probably need that for dogs more, don't you? I mean,
dogs and cats.
Dogs get super lonely. Cats are like, screw you, I'm going out on the town. Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to do our news sections of the show for this week. We've got a bit of feedback we wanted to get to. We've got some feedback about a couple of stories we talked about on the show earlier today. On the roaming issue, a feedback from Thomas from London, who says, just when you thought the EU couldn't get any more useless, they surprise us with this bold move, talking about flat rate data roaming fees. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of people agreed with the EU's move on this, had about quite a lot of comments on this. Liat, Dave Bannister also wrote in to talk about roaming.
Yes, he did. He was very enthusiastic. And about time too, he says. The necessary upgrade of data networks across Europe can only be encouraged through growth in usage.
It's a great point. It's absolutely a great point. Part of the problem is people don't use data overseas because it's so expensive.
We're terrified to touch our phones once we land.
Absolutely. And now we're going to. That'll mean we probably might be prepared to pay more. And with everyone paying into the same giant pot, that can only benefit everyone involved. We had a comment coming in from XTC Refugee Liv on the porn payment ban on Pornhub.
On Pornhub, yes. And he or she said, it's like Atvod are living 15 years behind the rest of us. This censorship approach is fundamentally flawed when it comes to online services. Even if you support such a heavy-handed approach, there are simply too many ways that a user can circumvent such controls.
Yeah, he also actually highlighted that Google's image search could be just as guilty. I think that's a little different, and Google does police that. But it's not a, you know, that's a search service. It's not a, you know,
You're not directly charging for this.
If you've got any comments, obviously podcast.wired.co.uk or write something on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/wiredUK. You've probably noticed that you're getting this show on a Thursday. This is the new day for the Wired.co.uk podcast. All shows from now on are going to be coming out to you on a Thursday. It just keeps us a little bit more timely. I think we'll see you next Thursday.
Bye.
Bye.
You've finished this week's episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.